find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
Good morning, it's 8:59, and this is KBOO Portland. Coming up in just about 2 minutes, it's Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's weekly news and commentary program, digging deep into the news you're not supposed to know. Air Cascadia at 10. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, two Northwest authors, Jenny Forrester and Lydia Yuknovich, talk about their recent work. Thank you, KBOO members, for your support. Keep informed and get involved by going to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. It's 9 o'clock.
Happy birthday!
The Oregon Historical Society is featuring 50 years of KBOO. The exhibit was created to relay our history and demonstrate the importance of community radio, featuring archival photographs and ephemera collected from KBOO's 5 decades of broadcasting. The exhibit tells our story in our members' own collective words. Our online tour features highlights from the exhibit and companion audio clips to enrich visitors' experiences. The exhibit runs until July 29th at the Oregon Historical Society at 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information and audio clips can be found at 50yearsofkboo.fm.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I have some headlines. I want to start with the South China Morning Post, which writes that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un made a surprise visit to China this week, holding talks with Chinese President Xi Jinping. Both sides described the visit as a key step in cementing their bilateral relationship, but there were differences in how they presented the talks between Xi and Kim. And this is the thrust of the article, that it presents both the Chinese and the North Korean sides' coverage of the event. They write, China's state news agency Xinhua said Kim was committed to denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, but that reference was not included in the report by North Korea's official Korean Central News Agency. Here's how state media from both sides reported on the talks. They write, Xinhua's version, at the invitation of Xi Jinping, General Secretary of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of China, and Chinese President Kim Jong-un, Chairman of the Workers' Party of Committee of Korea, and Chairman of the State Affairs Commission of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, paid an unofficial visit to China from Sunday to Wednesday. During the visit, Xi held talks with Kim at the Great Hall of the People in Beijing. Xi and his wife Ping held a welcoming banquet for Kim and his wife and watched an art performance together. And this is a lengthy article, and I mention it because you can find it easily enough. Go to scmp.com, scmp.com. It quotes Xi Jinping. It quotes Kim Jong-un saying, it is our consistent stand to be committed to denuclearization on the peninsula in accordance with the will of late President Kim Il-sung and late Secretary Kim Jong-il. Kim said that the DPRK is determined to transform the inter-Korean ties into a relationship of reconciliation and cooperation and hold a summit between the heads of the two sides. And that summit, actually, speaking for myself, is quite significant, and there has been talk in the Korean press, which I would also consider very significant in terms of averting war, and that is that South Korean government is considering telling the U.S. to back off. This is the first time I've seen any reference to that sort of attitude. I think it's the only thing that will save their lives, so it's very encouraging. The talk about denuclearization out of Kim's mouth means denuclearization on both sides, which is only rational, of course. As it is rational and has to do with peace, then the U.S. is going to have no part of that. I would say that the upcoming talks between Kim and Trump mean nothing, and that is because Trump has hired John Bolton, the warmonger, as his national security advisor. And so when I look at hopes for peace and hopes that war does not break out on the Korean Peninsula, I dial down on that one bit of information, that the South Korean government, the equivalent of the South Korean Secretary of State, has let loose that they might just tell the U.S., no, we won't follow you into war. And that's really, really good news if they follow through on that. It's 50 years since the My Lai massacre, 15 years since the U.S. invasion of Iraq. We now live in a mind-controlled dystopia where our status games have been downgraded from whether we have a nice new car to whether we have a roof over our heads. Things have changed. If you drive to commute, or if you drive for a living, you may have noticed that even though the weather is warming, you're not cleaning many insects from your vehicle's windshield. That's a nice change, isn't it? It's not something you would miss doing, but if you think about it, that was also true last year and the year before. When you use the windshield cleaner jets, it's usually to deal with road dust rather than bug splat, so it's not a passing phenomenon. The insects are really largely gone from the temperate areas of the world. Something like 75% to 80% gone, and they're not just gone from around here. They're gone from Europe. The birds that dined on them are gone, too. The spring chorus of birdsong that used to chime through my open bedroom window has dropped to an occasional solo or duet. Maybe you've noticed that, too. It should bother you. It's a sign of a global catastrophe that will soon drive food prices through the roof. The death of the insect world seems to have escaped the media almost entirely. We've heard a little bit about bees in here on KBOO. We have heard, thanks to Jen and other activists, we have heard about the death of the bees. Thanks to Chris, who follows this show, we've heard about it. But I was alerted to what little research is available in the press by an article by Robert Hunziker in Counterpunch. So here is part of it, as it appears in dissonantvoice.org, skipping from the initial paragraph. An alarming loss of insects will likely take down humanity before global warming hits maximum velocity. For the immediate future, the Paris Accord is riding the wrong horse, as global warming is a long-term project compared to the insect catastrophe happening right now. Where else, he writes, is found 40 to 90% species devastation. The worldwide loss of insects is simply staggering, with some reports of 75% up to 90% happening much faster than the paleoclimate record rate of the past five major extinction events. It is possible that some insect species may already be close to total extinction. It's established that species evolve and then go extinct over thousands of millions of years as part of nature's course, but the current rate of devastation is simply off the charts and downright scary. Without any doubt, it is difficult to imagine how humanity survives without insects, which are dropping dead in bunches right before our eyes. For proof, how many insect splats do people clean off windshields nowadays? Not many. How many fireflies do children chase at night? Not many. And he writes, several naturalists and environmental writers believe the massive loss of insects has everything to do with three generations of industrialized farming and the vast tide of poisons pouring over the landscape year after year, especially since the end of World War II. Ours is the first ever pesticide-based agricultural society. Dreadfully, it's an experiment that has gone dead wrong all of a sudden. Insects are basic to thousands of food chains. For example, the disappearance of Britain's farmland birds by over 50% in 40 years. Additionally, North American and European species of birds like larks, swallows, and swifts that feast on flying insects have plummeted, but these are only a few of many, many recorded examples of massive numbers of wildlife dropping dead right before our eyes. And he's talking about dropping dead of starvation. Continuing with the article, significantly, insects are the primary source for ecosystem creation and support. The world literally crumbles apart without mischievous burrowing, forming new soil, aerating soil, pollinating food crops, etc. Nutrition for humans happens because insects pollinate. One of the world's best and oldest entomological resources is the Creefield Entomological Society. Established in 1905, tracking insect abundance at more than 100 nature reserves, they first noticed a significant drop of insects in 2013 when the total mass of catch fell by 80%. Again in 2014, the numbers were just as low. Subsequently, the Society discovered huge declines in several observation sites throughout Western Europe. For example, Krefeld data, for hoverflies, a pollinator often mistaken for a bee, registered 17,000 hoverflies from 143 species trapped in a reserve in 1989, whereas by 2014 at the same location, 2,700 individuals from 104 species were caught, and that's down 84%. Down under in Australia, anecdotal evidence similarly shows an unusual falloff of insect populations. For example, Jack Hassenpush, an entomologist and owner of Australian Insect Farm, collects swarms of wild insects, but now says, quote, "I've been wondering for the last few years why some of the insects have been dropping off. This year has really taken the cake with the lack of insects. It's left me dumbfounded. I can't figure out what's going on," end quote. And the article, there's much more to the article, but I want to turn to some other articles on the same topic. One thing that the articles do not say much is that this is happening due to neonicotinoid insecticides in great proportion, I do believe, because they are the great leap forward in terms of insect death. They kill and keep killing. And they are persistent in the environment. They're certainly doing for the bees. Here's a report on the same phenomenon in Britain. This is from The Guardian. It's in an article by Michael McCarthy. "In the past 50 years in Britain, through the intensification of agriculture, we have destroyed well over half of our biodiversity, and the population of birds, butterflies, and wildflowers that once gave the landscape such animation and thrilling life have been utterly devastated. The figures are there," he writes. "Most notable is the case of farmland birds, which by the government's own admission declined by 56% between 1970 and 2015. It's estimated this represents a loss of at least 44 million individual of over huge swaths of the land. Once beloved species such as the lapwing, the spotted flycatcher, the cuckoo, and the turtle dove, as well as many once common butterflies such as the pearl-bordered fritillary and the once familiar blooms such as cornflowers have simply vanished. The fields may still look green in the spring, but it is mostly lifeless scenery. Apart from the pesticide-saturated crops, it is green concrete. This is a quite remarkable historical event. It has altered the character of Britain just as profoundly as other changes of the past half century, such as the end of social deference, the rise of multiculturalism, the coming of sexual equality. Yet its most remarkable aspect is this: people still do not perceive it." And I'm reading this article about Britain because there's so few articles about the United States, although I have found one from Scientific American that I'll be getting to in a moment. And this seems to be the problem here, too. People still do not perceive it. He writes, "In the past decade, specialists in conservation have come to understand the magnitude of the loss, but for the public at large, and indeed for most politicians, it is simply not on the radar. We are faced with a sort of mass cognitive dissonance, a nationwide unawareness of what is obvious. Most Britons, he writes, remain blithely unaware that since the beetles broke up, we have wiped out half our wildlife. Yet we are not alone. Last week, the French woke up in a dramatic way to the fact that their own farmland birds, their skylarks and partridges and meadow pipits, were rapidly disappearing. Le Monde, the most sober of national journals, splashed the fact across the top of its front page. French bird populations in general, two reports indicated, had fallen by a third just in the past 15 years, and the next day scientists said that this was symptomatic of a future facing Europe as a whole of biodiversity oblivion. Intensive farming, he writes, is the problem. Three generations of making agriculture more industrial have given Europe cheap food on a mammoth scale, but a terrible environmental price has eventually been paid, which we are now only now understanding. The heart of the matter is universal pesticide use. We benefit from farming wholly based on poison, which has exterminated more and more of the insects at the base of the myriad food chains in the natural world. In the recent past, few have cared about insect decline because people in general don't care about insects, but the numbers are becoming too big to ignore. The startling disclosure last October that since the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, the number of flying insects on nature reserves in Germany had dropped at least 76%, more than three-quarters around the world. Again, that's by Michael McCarthy. There's more to it, and you can find it in The Guardian. And there's another article in The Guardian about the phenomenon as it has been revealed in France by Patrick Barkham. He writes, the catastrophic decline in French farmland birds signals a wider biodiversity crisis in Europe, which ultimately imperils all humans. And that's what leading scientists have told The Guardian. A dramatic fall in farmland birds such as skylarks, whitethroats, and Orland bunting in France was revealed by two studies this week, with the spread of neonicotinoid pesticides and the decimation of insect life coming under particular scrutiny. Speaking for myself, this is the difference between the European articles and the American one, which I'll be getting to in a moment. The scientists do not dare say that it is a neonicotinoids, because so much funding for science depends on the producers of that sort of poison. And it's something I've noticed time and again. We like to think of scientists as detached and separate, apart from such concerns. But if you really, it's illogical to think that, because scientists are human beings, and human beings act according to certain cues and impulses. And scientists are no different, and they will find a way to get that big salary and that house in the suburbs. And in the United States, one of the ways to do that is not to point out the corruption at Monsanto or the mass death caused by pesticides. Returning to the article by Patrick Barkham, quoting Dr. Benoit Fontan of France National Museum of Natural History, we've lost a quarter of skylarks in 15 years. It's huge. It's really, really huge. If this was the human population, it would be a major thing. He says, we are turning our farmland into a desert. We are losing everything that we need. And we need that nature, that biodiversity. The agriculture needs pollinators and the soil fauna. Without that, ultimately, we will die. Barkham writes, farmland makes up 45% of the European Union's land area, but farmland bird populations in France have fallen by an average of a third over the past 15 years. In some cases, the declines are worse. 7 out of 10 meadow pipits have disappeared from French fields over that period, while 8 in 10 partridges have disappeared over 23 years, according to a second French study which examined 160 areas of typical arable plains in central France. Again, I'm reading this information about Britain and France simply because the information about the exact same phenomenon in the United States is rather sparse. So I'm encouraging you to extrapolate this to what is happening, as I say, on your windshield, or not what is not happening on your windshield. Thriving generalist species, they write, such as wood pigeons, blackbirds, and chaffinches, which also breed in urban areas and woodlands, are increasing nationally, but even they are decreasing on farmland, which led researchers to identify changing farming practices as the cause of big declines. Scientists point to the correlation between bird declines and the drastic reduction in insect life, such as a 76% fall in abundance of flying insects on German nature reserves over 27 years, which are linked to increasing pesticides and neonicotinoids in particular. Despite the French government aspiring to half pesticide use by 2020, sales have climbed, reaching more than 75,000 tons of active ingredient in 2014, according to EU figures. And I want to depart from the article right there and ask, why is this? And it's a rhetorical question, because, of course, I know why that is true. The power of sovereign governments has waned considerably compared to the power of finance and corporate capitalism. And so the French government has aspired, as this writer says, to half pesticide use. This means nothing, and pesticide use has increased because when a farmer needs to get a loan, he has to go to the capitalist financial institutions, which are interested in immediate short-term profits, who tie their loans to the use of certain pesticides and herbicides. It's more than just customary. It's a matter of guaranteeing that short-term profit. The financiers are not interested in whether the world is killed or not. They are not interested in whether the population suffers, whether people get tumors from the pesticides, and whether, as is the case now, and again, I want to point out that this should be absolutely alarming, somewhere between 75% and 90% of the volume of insects around the temperate zones of the world in the northern hemisphere have dropped dead. They're gone. They don't care. They care about the short-term profit. This is how the system is set up. The very, very rich determine these policies. And everyone who hangs on to the very, very rich and hopes to get that fat paycheck supports it. And so if the French farmers, or for that matter, if the American farmers would like to go organic while they're on their own, because they're not going to get a major loan from Citibank to do so. Now, there is an article in Scientific American on this, and it's quite useful. I present it to you. I've already criticized it for not mentioning neonicotinoids. This is a case of scientists being very careful about cause and effect, and it is also, of course, a case of scientists not wanting to bite the hand that feeds them. And I want to call out American scientists generally on that in many, many categories, and everything from nuclear science to agriculture. I'm really sick of this, and it needs to be called out. It will continue until it is called out. But Paula Cover in Scientific American writes, "Are we facing insect Armageddon? A recent study found that German nature reserves have seen a 75% reduction in flying insects over the last 27 years. The researchers involved made stark warnings that this indicated a wider collapse of the general insect population that would bring about an ecological catastrophe if left unchecked." But, she writes, is this an overdramatization of a single study in one country, or is there some real cause for concern? Here we answer five questions about how important this result is and whether we should be worried. And those five questions are, does it matter if insect populations decrease? Can we trust the methods of this study? Are the results reliable? What does a study in Germany mean to the rest of the world? And what is the reason for the decline? And so I'm going to get to those specifics. I do invite your calls. I'm informed that someone has called already, which means you memorized the number here. Good on you. But the number is 503-231-8187. That's the air room number. You can call to talk on this talk show. This is Press Watch. My name is Teresa Mitchell. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The number is 503-231-8187. And I believe it's Paula. I'll go to the first caller. It's Mike on the air. Hello, Mike.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for all your wonderful reporting. I was looking into something about soil erosion yesterday, so, boy, you're really in tune. I appreciate that. But I have something specific about something I'd love to have you comment on if you know anything about, and for citizen reporters out there to find out more about and dig into. There's this, I was handed a card by a radio station rep, KXRW, and 99.9 FM, Independent Radio Vancouver. And he was handing it out and taking interviews with headphones, mics, recording equipment at the Esther Short Park last weekend at the rally for gun control. And they were presenting themselves as being fairly progressive, but I don't know, all my antenna were going up, my Spidey antenna. I just wondered if you'd heard about them, and it just seemed like the potential for kind of a false flag thing was really kind of bugging me, and I want to look into it, but I would love to have your insight and expertise on it. So,
well, I'll have to put that off because I don't know anything about it. If I pull up KXRW, okay. I get Independent Radio Vancouver, Vancouver's newest independent nonprofit community radio station. And
yes,
let's see,
and it's not really on the air.
Partnership with Portland's X-Ray.FM and Media Institute for Social Change. So
yes.
And I know nothing about it. So thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you, and I hope the Koch brothers, if they're behind it, we expose them. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. So I was talking about the insect Armageddon, and I was have read from three articles in the international press about this, and I'm now settling on an article in Scientific American by Paula Cover. And I mentioned the five questions which she answers. First question, does it matter if insect populations decrease? And she writes, and I'm skipping ahead, they are key for human food production, the main resources for many birds, small mammals, reptiles, and other creatures. Many of our crops depend on insects for pollination that leads to fruit and seed production, and insects play a very important role in decomposing organic matter, which allow nutrients to return to the soil and support the next year's crops. So in terms of insects' ecological importance, a sharp decline in their abundance should be of great concern. Second question, can we trust the methods of this study, the German Nature Reserve study that I mentioned before? Different from previous studies, she answers, this study monitored insect biomass, which is what this means is that we do not know what specific kinds of insects are declining, although the data collected will allow this analysis in the future. Nor do we know if all kinds of insects are declining equally. We also do not know if the problem is that insects are getting smaller or whether there are fewer of them, but this approach provides a better estimate of the scale of the problem, even if it doesn't show the specific details. For example, whether the insects are getting smaller or fewer in number, the decline would have just as big an impact on bird diets. And speaking for myself, it has been killing off the birds. One aspect of this that I haven't mentioned is climate change. Birds, I noticed last year, birds migrate here. Birds migrate to their usual places and may find that the spring is too late, for example, which is the case last year, and many birds starved to death simply because the insects had not awakened. And from this information, I guess I can also say the remaining 20% or 25% of the insects had not awakened. This is a very severe global problem. It is a catastrophe, and it calls for, in my opinion, seizing power from the corporations. Seizing power from the corporations, something unimaginable, but something that has to be said, considered, worked out, and acted on. Returning to the article, previous studies looked mostly at one particular group of insects, and an argument about why a particular group was at risk overshadows the bigger question of whether this is a general problem. The new study suggests this is a very large general problem. Third question, are the results reliable? The study, she answers, is the result of a collaboration with the Entomological Society of Creffield, essentially made up of members of the public. This is a perfect demonstration of how we can collect more data by involving interested members of the public, also known as citizen science. Under current research funding models that usually only consider projects between 1 and 5 years in length, it's not possible to run a university-based study for a project on this scale, 64 locations over 27 years. So without the dedication of insect enthusiasts, we would not even know about this problem. I'll skip ahead to the last two questions, which she then answers in the Scientific American article, and then I'll go back to the phone lines. Fourth question, what does a study in Germany mean to the rest of the world? There are no comparable studies, she writes, in other countries, so any discussion of whether the results are applicable elsewhere would be purely speculative. This is especially true because we don't know the cause of the decline. And it is that sentence that I just read that leads to my criticism of Scientific American. I think that is fear of the corporations, and I think it is laziness, and it is posing as scientific caution. And this is something I've seen over and over. I am, of course, in favor of scientific caution, scientific conscience. And I'm saying that under capitalism, it is degraded. Last question, what is the reason for the decline? The main problem with this study, she writes, is that it does not help us find possible causes for such drastic decline. The researchers considered some aspects of vegetation and some climate variables, and neither seemed to be the main cause. And it goes on to the rest of the article and does not mention neonicotinoids, which in this context I think is quite an absence of information. So I'll go to the phone lines, and Keegan's on the air.
Hey, my name's Keegan Nelson. I'm an agricultural scientist, so I've done extensive research, and to confirm what you've done, what you're saying is true over my whole life. That's what I've been studying. And, you know, we've actually pinpointed three main causes for the massive reduction of organisms and the diversity of these organisms. It's land habitat loss from production of cities or buildings, and then the agrochemical use, like you said, it's broad spectrum to kill any organism that, you know, is interfering with that cash crop. So it's, you know, it's killing the pollinators and the beneficial organisms. And the third one is climate change, because like you said, now these organisms can't habitate the same environments anymore, and they're having to move and struggle through. Maybe and you know, they've lost a lot of their genetic diversity as far as that genetic resilience to adapt to new environments. So it really comes down to, this is just a massive worldwide problem. And if you're correct when you said that the United States has rejected this science, the only science out there to confirm this is European-based analysis that kind of complements their biodynamic system, and they confirm all of this. So it's a huge, massive problem that, you know, it extends far beyond agriculture. I mean, it extends, you know, the reason we're having such a health problems in the world is because we're no longer doing preventative medicine. You know, all of these foods that we're supposed to be eating, you know, they've been bred to have less and less of these nutritious qualities because these breeders only care about preservation. And so we're not having the nutrition in the food we need, and we're not eating healthy, diverse enough foods, and so we're not getting these vitamins and minerals and you know, small components that fight cancers and keep us healthy. And so we've moved into a treatment after the problem. And so, you know, you could really relate these diversity problems to every issue in the world. And, you know, I really like to see that the scientific debates going on, you know, for the public to get on the same page and to say, you know what, this isn't just going to be restricted knowledge to the scientists that are able to study this their whole life, because, you know, that's clearly not working, and that gives the corporations and the government too much power when they just completely reject the science of the world.
I thank you for calling in with your expertise. That was excellent. Thank you very much for calling in. I'll go to the next caller. Justin is on the air.
Hi, good morning, Teresa. Longtime listener. Appreciate the show. Enjoying it here. What the last caller had to say, he mentioned three different causes of the collapse of the insect world and our wildlife due to development, he said. And just recapping, he said development, pesticide use, basically, and climate change. But one thing that hasn't been mentioned, which I think is important to reflect on, is the electromagnetic effect that it has on wildlife. There's a website on Environmental Health Trust, which is ehtrust.org, which lays out a pretty good article called Bees, Butterflies, and Wildlife, Research on Electromagnetic Fields in the Environment. And on there, it lists several studies which have shown adverse health effects to insects. Let's see here.
ehtrust.org, Environmental Health Trust.
Yes. And I'll read you a quote from there.
Sorry. All right.
Here it says, cryptochromes are very badly affected by weak oscillating electromagnetic fields. They are orders of magnitude weaker than the Earth's steady magnetic field. This can disrupt both solar and magnetic navigation, which can amount for colony collapse disorders in bees. That's just one quote off the website. And there's an article in here. It lists a study called "Is Electromagnetism One of the Causes of CCD?" A work plan for testing this hypothesis. Several studies that are listed in here. The birds.
And that seems to be the main focus of the website. It says it's a 501c3 educational organization. So Environmental Health Trust, ehtrust.org.
Correct.
Wireless radiation and health. Interesting.
Yeah. I'll just take the rest of the show off the air. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you very much for that information. I'll just bookmark that and try to get up to speed. You're listening to Press Watch. This is KBOO Portland. The number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. That number again, 503-231-8187. And I'll check with the engineer. We have someone waiting. Edith is waiting to talk. Hello, Edith.
Hey, thank you. I was going to say the same things about habitat loss, our chemicals, and we also have our predator-prey synergy relationships that are being dismissed. Our water, and I was going to say electromagnetic as well as radiation. So that's what we have to deal with, and there's things we can do. We can require consistency in city, county, metro, state, federal policies. Right now, we can stop this city of Portland and the Parks Department using herbicides, insecticides. We can require that all those housing places getting tax subsidies or our tax dollars to support them or to avoid tax payments have to stop using herbicides, insecticides, and we have to also stop the police from using the stingers, the radiation, and microwave in which they are spying on and interrupting protesters, etc. And we can also require that we have naturescaping and that any, for example, Franklin High School destroyed all their the sustainability gardens and everything, and then put out poison, took down the trees, and didn't leave any garden space. So we can require that anything using our local tax dollars or being exempt from paying taxes or reduced taxes have to not commit those crimes against humanity and
you know, I really have to agree.
And that they implement very strong, proactive ways of restoring or generating the environment. And that also includes having public power and solar power, because the PGE and Pacific Power coal, frack gas dependency and messing up with our hydro drums are totally inexcusable. They're not sustainable. It's costing much for us, and it's destroying our food, air, water supply. We need to hold U.S. Forest Service accountable. We're spending too much of our tax dollars subsidizing each log that comes out. It costs us too much money.
And it's really obnoxious when they load up a helicopter with toxins and just start spraying it on everyone.
And we are losing. We pay them to destroy our forests. We need to have them pay in us for the harm they have already done. We need biodiversity in our forests as we destroy our trees, as we're not having our salmon bring salmon nitrogen to our trees. We are then not having the rain and the water that we need to have for our climate cooling that we need to have. And we need to say that with all new buildings that are built in Portland, that they have to have green walls, green roofs, green eaves, et cetera, instead of what they're having now. And that all these so-called subsidies for low-income housing are not low-income. They're not accessible housing.
You're right,
they
of course. We are getting a little off topic here.
That each of these that are built have to make sure that they're healthy for pollinators, that they're cooling, and that they are protecting our stormwater. So when you take care of our insects, you take care of public health, you reduce violence, and we reduce the amount of money that we're wasting on cops.
I see what you mean. I apologize for that.
See how it all goes together? Thank you very much, and I'm so glad for your listeners. And Teresa, I love you so much for what you do. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling in. I've been talking about the worldwide, certainly temperate zone, northern hemisphere temperate zone catastrophe, the loss of somewhere between 75 and 90% of the biomass of insects, something that is not being reported much and which in any event is certainly not in the public view. This is essentially something that is right in front of our eyes, right in front of our noses, and yet, because we do not communicate about it, is invisible. And now I want to talk about an aspect of the system that we live in that has enforced that. I was looking up information for my show this morning, and I decided I would look up Alton Sterling and Stefan Clark, two young men who were blown away by cops, and black men who were blown away by cops. And when I use Google search, I've noticed, as perhaps you have, that you can put in part of a word, part of a name, and you will get pretty immediately and often quite accurately suggestions as to where your search is going to go. This is an effort to make it easier for you to search, to keep you on their website and to get those ads out to you. But I noticed, not for the first time, that when I bring up certain topics which are upsetting to the status quo, they do not trigger those suggestions. So I had to type in the entire two words Stefan Clark to search Google News for Stefan Clark, and I had to put in both words Alton Sterling, and I had to spell those correctly because it would not suggest those terms. It was actively, as the algorithm has been set by someone somewhere, to direct people away from searching for the phenomena of the genocide of people of color, and particularly of young black men, by police. And I'm not going to get into those specific cases right now, except to say that we have entered into the era of psychographic manipulation. It's a computer extension of the propaganda state, and it takes mind control to new levels. Noam Chomsky has written of mind control in his publications over the past decades, meaning that the techniques, intensity, omnipresence, and persistence of corporate-owned news, entertainment, and advertising has produced a compliant mindset in the target population, namely you, namely me. And of course, the study and application of such efforts goes back in the modern world to at least Edward Bernays and his corporate-based psychological warfare techniques. The Pentagon has its PSYOPs manuals, and Washington has its various three-letter secret police agencies with their paid journalists. Psychographic manipulation, with its myriad data points and its artificial intelligence algorithms, has now put mind control into a new order of magnitude. This is a warning. No one likes to think that they are being successfully manipulated. I don't. And it is because of that that I've been doing this program for the last three decades. So in an effort to convince you, I ask you to consider joining me for a moment in a thought experiment. A thought experiment. Rather than asserting right away that you are being manipulated following the conversation in that manner, I want you to think instead what it might be like for you to engage in an effort to influence someone else. This can be a stranger to you for this thought experiment, or maybe someone you know well. To do this, you're going to need a well-researched model, not only of human behavior generally, but of this particular person's psyche. And more, you'll need to know this person's daily habits. You're going to need more than what they would ever tell their psychiatrist. You'll need to know what they like to purchase, who they associate with, where they like to go, where they spend time, and even how fast their heart beats at these various stations of their life. Your need for analysis in this thought experiment is intense here, and fortunately for your effort, all that information is right at your fingertips. All of that information is now online and available. Supercomputers retain it, and what's more, they analyze that data, and using artificial intelligence, they create a model of your target's psyche to the point that their next move, that person's next move, is easily anticipated. So now, in this thought experiment, you have all the tools. You have an analysis of your target, this one person, in greater depth and insight than they have ever likely applied to themselves. You know human behavior in great depth, and it's all in your machine, and you know this person's fears and desires. You have a lightning-fast machine at your fingertips that crunches all those data points, runs it through tried-and-true algorithms, and tells you what to say, when to say it, what colors and images and sounds to add to your messages. Do you now think, under those circumstances, you would have a chance of secretly manipulating that person? Of course you would. But you would not engage in such insidious behavior outside of this thought experiment, because to do so violates the agency and the humanity of the person you have targeted. All of the indices I've been describing are available about you online. Your smartphone has been reporting your location and your speed of travel, as recorded by GPS. The tungsten vibration detector is used to know whether you are in a car, a bus, or walking or riding a bike, how much effort it takes, as your heartbeat is recorded and analyzed. The microphones on your computer that you carry around with you report on whether you have a cough or intestinal gas, whether you talk to yourself or mutter under your breath, and what you say when you do. No one has to be listening or paying attention to this data. It's all automatically compiled and expertly analyzed by the algorithms, by the artificial intelligence programs. Now add in all of your likes, the websites you go to, the porn you prefer, and when you prefer it, and just how much your heartbeat and breathing changes with each type, just how long it takes to get you off, what clothing and automobiles you like to look at, the frequency of certain words in your texts and posts, your answers over the years to those cute, just for fun, online polls, what your friends say about you and how often and what way they react to you, and all that information is plugged into the most sophisticated psychological analysis ever, fully automated, replicated for just about everyone. Your mind is an open book, and it's available to the highest bidder. And the highest bidder likely doesn't have your best interests at heart. Let me dial down on this a bit. Here's part of the analysis that is programmed into the model of your mind at Cambridge Analytica, which has been in the news, of course, for manipulating the elections. And there's been some skepticism as to whether they can. But what I found in researching this is that it's very unlikely that they didn't. It's very likely that Cambridge Analytica affected the last election, and I can see now how they did it. We'll talk about the Big Five personality traits. They're also known as the five-factor model and also known as OCEAN. That's an acronym, which I'll explain in just a moment. It's applied to personality survey data. Some words used to describe aspects of personality often apply to the same person. This is from Wikipedia. For example, someone described as conscientious is more likely to be described as always prepared rather than messy. This theory is based, therefore, on the association between words, but not on neuropsychological experiments. This theory uses descriptors of common language and therefore suggests five broad dimensions commonly used to describe the human personality and psyche. The five factors have been defined as openness to experience, that's O, conscientiousness, that's C, extroversion, E, agreeableness, A, and neuroticism, N, often represented by the acronyms OCEAN or CANOE. Beneath each proposed global factor, there are a number of correlated and more specific primary factors. For example, extroversion is said to include such related qualities as gregariousness, assertiveness, excitement, seeking warmth, activity, and positive emotions. That these underlying factors can be found is consistent with the lexical hypothesis, that is, personality characteristics that are most important in people's lives will eventually become a part of their language. And secondly, that more important personality characteristics are more likely to be encoded into language as a single word. I can get into more details of this, and I'm doing so in order to make my point that we, as citizens of the United States or residents of the United States, are being very powerfully, increasingly powerfully manipulated, and we need to become aware of this. This, by the way, this brings up the value, increasing value of community radio, a curated source of news in the case of this program and many other public affairs programs in the case of KBOO News. This is the counter. This is what you have available against this very powerful machine that is being used against your mind. And the number to call, 503-231-8187. I'll go to caller. And Jill is on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
After listening to everything you've had to say, I wonder if you're still on Facebook. I'm wondering why anyone is still on Facebook. I'm wondering why anyone is bothering to tweet. And I'm wondering if people can get off this addiction to their iPhones. You can live without them. I do.
Well, people live without them. And
the radio.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Huh?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It is possible to unplug from some of this. It's also possible to use these things in a way that is more careful. It's possible for those of us who, but certainly not me, who are technologically inclined to invent some kind of thing that is not plugged into that system. I don't think we need to use that system. Since we know it's being used for bad purposes, why participate? I don't see why, after what we've heard about Facebook, why anyone would want to use it.
That's a really good question, and in fact, Facebook stocks are crashing right now because people are making that decision.
That's right, and I think people could get in contact with Apple and tell them what they think, and it's possible not to use iPhone. It really is. Bring back the flip phone. That's what I use. Nobody can track me. I'm not saying this to brag. I'm just,
people
are probably tired of hearing it. But it really is possible to get off this addiction to the latest technological crap, which is actually harming people electronically.
And when you say addiction,
that
you're absolutely, I mean, that's exactly the word. And these things are designed specifically to be addictive.
It's a compulsive, obsessive addiction. And I think there are certain things that flow through society which are catching. During the Nazi era, a lot of people became involved with that kind of thought process, and it seems to be catching from one person to the next. It is a form of mental illness, I really think so, and we don't have to participate in this. It's not necessary. We can design a society that doesn't include this crap. And I could go on for a long time, but I won't, because I think you've already said it. I'm just putting out the word there that some people have unplugged and have not died. I'm not denying the usefulness of a lot of this stuff in medicine. There are a lot of good uses for it, and people should continue to use it for good purposes, but we don't have to fall into it for bad purposes. We do need to educate ourselves and invent something else, okay?
I quite agree, and my own approach so far has not been yet to cut that off. But
Well, you're a reporter, so maybe you need to be involved with it.
I want to see. I want to understand
it, right?
Better. I am trying to increase my sophistication in my approach. For example, I've decided to get a Faraday wallet. This is a wallet which is simply contains either foil or a mesh, which uses the Faraday effect to cut off your cell phone when you're not using it. You can turn it off, but it still has some function, can be tracked. This is also true of flip phones. But if it's in a Faraday wallet, it is blanked off from the electromagnetic spectra and cannot function and cannot be tracked. These things cost under $20 for the most part and can be found online. Also can be made, again, you can find instructions for that. So that's one aspect
right.
of it. And also the settings that I use are not adequate to prevent the effects that I've been talking about and that you've been talking about. But it occurred to me over the last couple of weeks that I haven't used the settings on Facebook, email, or anything else. I've been utterly unsophisticated. And of course, I've been tracked and tracked and tracked. And that's very interesting to me. And I'm finding out the ways in which I've been tracked. But as you say, perhaps the solution for most people might be just to tune out, unplug.
Yeah, or invent. There could be something else that's invented. Oh, you know, by the way, the car insurance companies seem to be offering people better rates if they, you know, attach these certain tracking things to their cars, right?
Yes, they do. And you know, as I was saying, they can track you with your cell phone already and tell, you know, how fast you habitually go or how fast, what your peak speed is already.
Right. Now, if you're hiking in the wilderness, you might want to be tracked for good reasons in case you get lost. But I think we should have control over this stuff. In other words, keep the analog stuff that's really working for us. Use the mail. Don't let them take that away from us. Keep the analog stuff that's working and use the electronic stuff that works for us and just not buy into it. We
right
don't
on.
Need to buy these products. We really don't. We can buy other products.
Well, thank you
not.
Very much for that.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. I really like your show.
Thanks. Time is 9:51. And you're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Now, I've talked about the intensity of this tracking and how thoroughly it is analyzed and how powerfully it is now analyzed. We're talking about an analysis for each frame. In the case of Cambridge Analytica seeking to influence the last election in the last few minutes, I hope to get down to the nitty-gritty of this. I've been trying to convince you just how powerful this technique is. These 5,000 points, according to Cambridge Analytica themselves, these 5,000 points of information about each of 220 million Americans were crunched with supercomputers to come up with targeted manipulation. This targeting is, of course, very sophisticated. Again, these 5,000 points of information are vastly more than any psychological professional has ever had about you. It's more than you've ever applied to yourself, unless you're a genius in this regard, a genius in terms of self-awareness. This is a very powerful tool I'm describing here. And this was applied to voters in these different ways, according to this thing that I've described as OCEAN or CANOE, the acronym for the five factors. Openness, consciousness, conscientiousness, extroversion. Let's see, what does the A stand for? The last one is neuroticism. And I'm sorry, I forgot about the A. Hopefully I'll find it in a moment. But agreeableness is the A. Okay, and so all of these things together are part of this, part of the algorithms that are plugged in with your information. These aspects of the human psyche are well known and well worked out. And so when it came to the election of Donald Trump, when it comes to the elections that Cambridge Analytica throws by way of manipulation, what they did is they found someone like you and they found your score within these five factors and they targeted the ads to you to push you towards Trump according to your fears and your desires under that OCEAN protocol. So if you are particularly neurotic, no one likes to be called neurotic, but let's say damaged, let's say you've had hellish things happen to you in your life. If this is true of you, and you have some fears related to that, they will address those fears and make you fear more and direct you towards Trump. This is what happened. If you are open to new ideas, they appeal to that aspect of your personality. If you're a conscientious, you like things neat and clean, they tried to present Trump to you as someone who's going to put things in order. Are you following me so far on this? All of these aspects are brought together to target ads specifically to you, and they did appear to you in Facebook, in other websites that you brought up. These ads were meant to appeal to you, and even if they didn't mention Trump, they are meant to push you towards voting towards Trump, and 66 million, I think it is, did. And of course, one of the big aspects of personalities that is fairly easily manipulated, because right up until the election of Trump, people didn't like to admit to it, is racism, xenophobic, and cruelty-based racism. And this was powerfully manipulated, successfully manipulated, and so we have Trump. And so, to fight back against this, we must become increasingly individually aware of these techniques, how they are used, and we must begin to curate our own information rather than to allow it to be sucked up by organizations like Facebook. In the case of Facebook, you are not the customer. You are the product. The advertisers are the customers. And the information that they gather about you is also the product and can be sold, as I said, and will be sold always to the highest bidder. As a previous caller was mentioning, it can be sold to the Koch brothers, and I'm sure that it is being sold to the Koch brothers because that's what they do. And so this kleptocracy, this plutocracy that we suffer under, which is destroying the world with fossil fuel use, for example, with pesticide use, is unapproachable until we break loose of these mental chains. Time is 9:55. You're listening to Press Watch. I think I have time for one more caller, so I'll go to you. Hi, Lynn, you're on the air.
Hey, Teresa.
Hi.
I just wanted to respond to the woman caller who wanted people to, go back to flip phones. I don't want to be ageist, but I'm sure she remembers the days when people had rotary phones. And kids are not going to do that. You know, the Parkland high school kid said, social media really helped them get things together. People need to use things wisely. Like, I know, I've known for a really long time what Facebook and Google, that if you put anything on there, the whole world knows about it, and then they track you. But I think the genie's kind of out of the bag with that, and we're going to have to figure out ways to deal with it.
And there really are ways.
And there are ways, and young people will figure that out.
There are apps, and there are... There are probably apps not yet. I'm sorry, go ahead.
They are smarter than Cambridge Analytica. They know how to use all this stuff, and they will figure it out, and we can't, like, go backwards technologically. That's just not going to happen. And saying that to some young person, get off your phone. Get off, eye rolling. It's just not going to happen. That's part of their lives. They don't know what it's like not to have that sort of thing.
Okay.
And it helps them. Like I said, the kids from the Parkland High School said that social media helped them set up this march that was one of the biggest marches that has ever been held.
This is, I think you're right too. And I can also see the value of unplugging. And this is a case where this is a very complex situation, and people are going to react in their own idiom. So let a thousand flowers bloom is my attitude. Let us do all of these things according to our inclination, and we will see what we can see. But it is important that we understand what's happening and that we resist in whatever manner
Absolutely.
Is appropriate. Thanks so much, Lynn, and hope to hear you on the air more soon.
Me too.
On Positively Revolting. And
Thanks,
it looks like I have run out of time. So you've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. You've been listening on 90.7 FM in the greater Portland area, other frequencies in greater Cascadia, and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
K KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Afghanistan to India, a rubab sitar duet on Saturday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall in Portland. Join rubab master Humayun Saki for his first performance in Oregon and sitarist Josh Feinberg for short solo sets. Then they will play a set together in the second half of the concert. Refreshments and concessions will be served. Again, that's Afghanistan to India, a rubab sitar duet, on Saturday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Peace Jam Northwest on Saturday, April 7th and Sunday, April 8th at the Erb Memorial Union on the University of Oregon campus in Eugene. Open to teens of age 14 to 18, the Peace Jam Conference will include several addresses by Dr. Shireen Abadi, the first woman ever to become a judge in Iran and the first Muslim woman to win the Peace Prize. There will also be service projects, workshops in leadership, civic engagement, peace building, and more. Again, that's the Peace Jam Northwest on Saturday, April 7th and Sunday, April 8th at the Erb Memorial Union on the University of Oregon campus in Eugene. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 10 o'clock. Coming up next is Air Cascadia.